Monster Man, special episode, Krampus.
Hello and welcome to Monster Man, a show about monsters because monsters are great. I'm James Holloway, and I'm reading my way through the gaming books of yesteryear. And as I do, I'm talking about the monsters that I find in them. Their history, their mythology, their ecology, their imagery, and how to use them in games.
Today's episode is a special episode, brought to you by the generosity of my Patreon supporters, and in particular, of Patreon backer Dave, who's asked me to talk about Krampus. If you'd like to be like Dave and get your own special episode, all you gotta do is go to patreon.com/monsterman and pledge at the $5 level. And if you do that, you'll also get the rewards for lower tiers, including my other podcast, Patron Deities, in which I take an in-depth look at the Deities and Demigods supplement for Advanced Dungeons & Dragons 1st Edition, and how to use religion and mythology in your fantasy role-playing games. If today's episode sounds a little funny, it's because I'm recording in a different place than usual, so the acoustics may be a little bit different. I moved my setup downstairs so that I could hang out with Allison while I worked, which is great, and I just was too lazy to move it back upstairs into my smaller office. All right. Let's talk about Krampus. Now, I wish I had done this one a few weeks ago, because it would have been better as a seasonal special, but I get to him when I get to him, I'm afraid. Who is Krampus? Krampus is a figure from Christmas folklore, specifically from Germany and kind of German-speaking Alpine regions particularly. But he's also one of a broad category of kind of folkloric Christmas monsters. And he sort of overlaps two different folklore categories. One is that there are a large number of folk wild man customs in which dancers or revelers put on monster human or animal human costumes and do a kind of rampage, you know, through town playing pranks and making mischief, kind of a wild rumpus, to go back to our episode on Where the Wild Things Are. And the other is the tradition of including a kind of anti-Father Christmas figure. So whoever your seasonal gift-giving figure is, you know, Santa Claus or Santa Claus or Father Christmas or Dead Moros or whoever, sometimes has like a bad guy sidekick. So while one of the characters rewards the good children, the other one punishes the naughty children. And of course, that's a very common folkloric motif, this idea that there is a monster who comes to get all the little children who, you know, pull their brother's hair or don't eat their vegetables. Now, in recent years, Krampus has gone from being a comparatively obscure folkloric figure to being one that's more widely known. And this really started in kind of the 2010s, and now there are Krampus movies and there are Krampus episodes of TV shows. And I think people in general are starting to get more interested in the folkloric sort of the folk customs that get added to Christmas. You know, the most recent, I haven't seen Christmas Chronicles 2, and I don't really plan to, but the Netflix Christmas movie Christmas Chronicles 2 includes the Yule Cat, for example. And I think the idea that you would have seen the Yule Cat, you know, a comparatively obscure folklore figure, in a movie that has Kurt Russell in it, you know, 10 years ago, I think that would have been pretty unlikely. Arguably, it's pretty unlikely today. So I think there has come to be more of an interest in these folk customs and in the sort of different cultural interpretations of Christmas. I don't know why that is, but I think it's a welcome thing. Now, Krampus is a monster with a frightening monstrous appearance, but I think that there are actually a lot of things that make the traditional Krampus a little awkward to use in a fantasy game, which is funny to suggest since, you know, he's a fierce monster. But as with many monsters from folklore, Krampus is designed for, well, he's not designed, but Krampus is part of a mundane world. The rampage of the wild man characters is shocking because it is a violation of societal norms. It's an occasion when the rules are upended, and that's something that is often associated with holidays. Think of, you know, fool kings or boy bishops and things like that. This idea of the temporary suspension of the normal rules by which we live our lives. But that doesn't apply as much in a society where people have a mental category into which to place monster attacks on their towns. If Krampus is going around killing people, then that just puts him into the category of like an orc or a hobgoblin. And if he's not, then that just puts him into the category of kind of a magical nuisance. But I don't think that he has the same level of shock or fright in a world where monsters not only exist, but are commonplace. His supernatural transgressions against social norms are far from unique in a D&D society, and that robs him of some of his impact. Still, I think that there are several different ways that you could incorporate Krampus or a Krampus-like monster into a fantasy game. The first is if you're dealing with a low magic monsters are unique setting. So there's kind of a wave of games that are partly influenced by Warhammer Fantasy roleplay and maybe influenced by a version of Warhammer Fantasy roleplay that exists more in the designer's heads than on the page, where they exist in a kind of folkloric shadow haunted Europe that doesn't have marauding armies of orcs or anything like that, but just has like these little towns with strange creatures in them. This is the something stinks in Stilton kind of aesthetic, I guess. And I say more influenced by what people think Warhammer is like than what it's actually like, because of course in Warhammer Fantasy Roleplay, like Grimgore Ironhide's out there somewhere, right? There are whole orc nations, but never mind that. In that case, you can have Krampus be a monster that is normally folkloric, but that has somehow come to life for the purposes of this scenario. In a conventional dungeon fantasy world, this doesn't work because folklore is real. People believe in fairies. That's because fairies are real. People believe in goblins. That's because goblins are real. Boggarts, bacons, boobries, you name it. But in a low fantasy setting, you can absolutely have a story about how if you're naughty, Krampus will come and get you. And then one day, Krampus comes and gets you. You know, maybe I'm overthinking this because if you think back to the episode we did on the Ruzulka, all of those Ruzulka stories are kind of set within a sort of pseudo-Slavic context, presumably to make them settings in which Ruzulka exist folklorically. It's one of those things that sort of shouldn't make sense in the game, but you just don't think about it and it's fine. That's not like a little elbow jab, by the way. I completely believe in not thinking about things and it being fine in games. Just saying, that's not really what this game is about, and you're good to go. So, we could have the situation be that there is this town and that all of a sudden Krampus has come to life and is taking away the naughty children. This represents Krampus as a new arrival in the town scene, and so it reminds me a little bit of Claws. Claws is a comic book created by Grant Morrison and Dan Mora, and it's basically about what if Santa Claus was Batman, or maybe what if Santa Claus was Wolverine. Santa Claus as a superhero, and in the first series of it, he fights Krampus. Well, he fights a sort of demonic character. I actually don't remember if it's called Krampus in the text. And in the sort of climactic battle, the demon says, you know, why are you even fighting me? I'm only going to take the bad children. Klaus, like, chases after him and jumps into the demon's sleigh and attacks him and responds, there are no bad children. It's pretty good. Anyway, my point is simply that there, we have this idea that there's this monster that previously people believed in, and now it's sort of come to life. The second approach is to have Krampus be something that happens, like, in one specific place. So that this is, like, a curse that's been placed on a particular village, that, like, if the children here are bad, then the Krampus really will come and get them. But there's maybe not, like, a general rule all across the world. And I think that there are two approaches that you can take. One is, you know, maybe a witch placed a curse on this village a long time ago because the children were so naughty and they played all kind of tricks on her, and maybe she wasn't really so bad, right? Like, just like an old woman who lived at the edge of the village, and because she was kind of, you know, weird and had a big hat, the kids would, like, do mischievous things to her and pester her black cat. And so she put a curse on them that unless they behaved, Krampus would come and get them. And I think this plays on the sort of natural sympathy that fantasy game player characters have with misbehaving children. I mean, I don't want to say that there are a lot of similarities between the two groups, but, like, there are some. The other is that the adults in the town are sort of somehow maintaining the spell. Like, there's some kind of ritual that the adults do every year to keep Krampus going in order to, you know, keep their children terrified into docility. After all, if the children just behave, then no one's gonna get hurt. Horror humor is tricky. I think this works best if the children are not necessarily being killed or eaten. Instead, they're being taken away to Krampus's cave to sort of carry out various Willy Wonka-like punishments. This makes the Krampus scenario ideally suitable as a kind of holiday one-shot or holiday special for your ongoing campaign. You could do this with, like, an outsider to the village, right? So the, you know, the dungeon is nearby, the scholar that the player character is a contact has like moved with her son to the village to be closer to it and study it more. And they go there and they're like, you know, have you completed your research on the dungeon? And she goes, no, I haven't had time. I've been so worried about my son. He was taken away by a monster. It particularly works if you get Krampus to view the player characters as naughty children. You know, maybe if what makes an adult in this town is initiation into the Krampus cult, they're not initiated. The scholar's not initiated, but she's also not naughty, so that's all right. One aspect of Krampus is the idea that he is a demon who's been bound by the church, who was bound by Saint Nicholas. This kind of goes some way toward explaining why a monstrous wild man who subverts social order is being used as an enforcer of that social order. Now, the truth is that wild man rights essentially serve to reinforce existing social rules. You know, by temporarily subverting them, they actually reify them. But in a world where chaotic monsters exist, why is chaotic evil Krampus helping out neutral good Saint Nicholas? Saint Nicholas is neutral rather than lawful good, obviously. Generosity is probably the ultimate neutral good virtue. So, it could be the case that... I'm sorry, if you can hear snoring in the background, that's Pepper. It could be the case that the church, the whatever religious institution has the Santa Claus equivalent in your setting, has bound this actual demon into their service, and the naughty children are essentially the kind of tithe they pay it to keep working for them. They've used a demon as their enforcer. The slight variation on this is if Krampus is not a demon, but a devil, because devils are rule enforcers. Their job is to punish sinners. All the bad people get to get sent down to hell and suffer its iron laws, and thus the balance of the cosmos is maintained. Devils are just doing their bit. So if Krampus is a devil, his appearance and behavior would be frightening to mortals, but he's not actually a force of chaos. He's a force of order. He keeps people in line by terrorizing them. Now that could be a partnership of expedience with the Saint Nick equivalent, or it could be some kind of evil plot where Krampus has inveigled himself into the holiday festivities in this role of a frightening but ultimately beneficial enforcer of order, but with some ulterior motive, you know, the corruption of Saint Nicholas or something like that. I hate to go here, but this does raise some questions about where Krampus and Santa fit into D&D's planar cosmology. Because the easiest way to answer the question of why Krampus only shows up in a particular village or at a particular time, rather than just being like a super well-known phenomenon that occurs everywhere, right? Like, there aren't just a bunch of Krampuses that all live in the woods. There's the one Krampus, is to assume that Krampus is not native to the prime material plane. He lives on another plane and can only access the prime material plane at certain times of the year or under certain circumstances. He's clearly the whatever spell allows him to come into the world also prevents him from harming people who aren't naughty children. So is it just on a particular day? Does he maybe appear only in the town which has the naughtiest children? So in all the realm, only one portal opens every year to disgorge the Krampus and turn him loose on an unsuspecting village, and it's whichever village has the naughtiest children. That's fun. That's quite sort of fairy tale-y. I like that. Another way to deal with the presentation of Krampus in games is to use the tradition of dressing up as wild men. Christmas time is a traditional time for, indeed, holiday celebrations in general. There are lots of these that kind of go throughout the holiday year. I don't know if you read Ronald Hutton's Stations of the Sun, but it's kind of a history of the British ritual year. It talks a lot about seasonal customs and festivals, many of which include some kind of costumed, like, official contained rowdiness or official contained begging tradition. An example of this would be one that if you listen to the podcast Ken and Robin Talk About Stuff, they've recently done a thing about mumming or mummering, which is a costumed ritual traditional disorder that goes on around Christmas in what I'm assured I'm supposed to call Newfoundland. And that's, again, it's a time when at the holiday season, people put on these masks and outrageous costumes and engage in behavior that would otherwise be socially, you know, not approved of, you know, drinking and rowdy partying and entering people's homes in disguise and stuff like that. And so if Krampus is a bit like that, then you could have the Krampus costumes be sort of magical artifacts that when you put on the shaggy Krampus coat and the Krampus mask with its horns, then the spirit of Krampus enters you and you kind of gain Krampus powers. Even if that power is just that you're able to fit a bunch of naughty children into your sack, or that the things you do while wearing the Krampus mask don't affect your alignment. Actually, that's a pretty hot magical item in general. Who does this mask disguise your features from? Oh, the gods. You know, so maybe the spirit of Krampus is in the costume. I think that that really, ritual costumes are something that come up in a lot of cultures and are comparatively rare in Dungeons and Dragons. Or when they are, they usually things like masks that give you a bonus to charisma or masks that give you a bonus to disguise. And those are all really useful, but I think that they are maybe, those are just practical and lack some of the ritual significance that these masks often do, right? Because a lot of the time, ritual is about taking on a particular sacred identity and then embodying that identity. So if Krampus is a being that manifests in our plane through the adoption of Krampus masks, then those masks could be the turning point of the scenario. And then, you know, finding them and like deciding what to do with them could be good, because maybe if you destroy the masks, then the demons will be released. And allowing the demons out every now and again to cause rowdiness in a socially acceptable manner is essentially a kind of pressure valve, which mimics the way in which things like wild man parades and whatever act as societal pressure valves, allowing a little bit of disorder, but under carefully controlled conditions. I mentioned the idea of holiday specials for campaigns. This is something that I do a lot. I didn't actually get to do one in 2020, 2021, just because my gaming schedule didn't quite line up such that I could do a proper holiday special for my Other Dust game. I guess I did run a Christmas-themed Brindlewood Bay game, Jingle Bell Shock, so that was good. I guess I got a holiday special in there. But traditionally, you know, when I ran my D&D campaign, I would do a holiday special with a kind of Christmas-themed adventure, and, you know, there was a big fight on top of a flying sleigh. There were animated snow constructs or snowlums and things like that. And I don't know, I think in my mind, I tend to conceptualize games I run almost as though they were something like a TV series or a, you know, a comic book, like a form of serialized adventure. And in things like that, you would find a Christmas special or a holiday special. So it's just something that I tend to include. I think it's fun. I'm a bit of a jolly old elf when it comes to the holidays. You know, I spend, you know, most of the latter part of December unironically full of seasonal cheer. Different GMs may experience different results, but I think a little Krampus-themed scenario around the holidays, it could be a lot of fun, especially if you take a little bit of a different twist on it. I like that mask idea, though. Potentially something in there. I'm no good with mechanics, but could be a lot of fun.
Hey everybody, it's James from the future here with something that I forgot I wanted to add to this episode. I can't believe that I spent 20 minutes talking about Christmas monsters and didn't mention the person from whose work I've learned the most about Christmas monsters, which is Benito Cereno. Benito is a writer and comic book creator. I'm sure I've mentioned him before in other kind of folklore monster related episodes, but he has written a lot about Christmas monsters, and in particular, he did a whole series of posts on Tumblr called The Alphabet of Christmas, in which he did one different kind of like Christmas folklore character for every letter of the alphabet, and I believe that you can get those in illustrated format as a book. So Benito Cereno, The Alphabet of Christmas, Benito's writing and Benito's sort of podcast appearances and other things are where I learned a lot about, you know, Christmas folklore and Christmas monsters. He's good on kind of folk monsters in general. He did some podcast guest appearances with a local news station in Kentucky about the, you know, the folkloric monsters of Kentucky, for example. So that was really interesting. And is where I learned the phrase Kentucky meth hog. But he's very sound on Christmas stuff. And if you want like a good, fun to read introduction to Christmas monsters, then I would definitely take a look at The Alphabet of Christmas by Benito Cereno. If you just search Benito, B-E-N-I-T-O, Cereno, C-E-R-E-N-O, Christmas monsters, you'll find The Alphabet of Christmas right away. So that would be my recommendation for some further reading.
So, okay, that is Krampus. Dave, I hope that you enjoyed this episode. Thank you once again for your support. If you'd like to get your own special episode, don't forget that all you have to do is go to patreon.com/monsterman and pledge at the $5 level, or you can pledge at a lower level if you prefer. Or if you don't want to pledge at all, one thing that you could do that would be really helpful would be to leave a rating or review for this show on the podcasting app of your choice. In our next episode, we're returning once again to Creature Catalog, the 1986 supplement for Basic Dungeons & Dragons, so please join me then for Monster Man, a show about monsters, because monsters are great. Thank you for listening.
If you have a favorite monster or something you'd like me to talk about, you can reach me on Twitter at GonzoHistory or by email, gonzohistory@gmail.com. To support Monster Man, just go to patreon.com/monsterman. Thank you to Ray Otis for designing the thumbnail image. Our introductory music is Solve the Damn Mystery by Jesse Spillane from the album Descent of the Goober Monster, used under a Creative Commons Attribution License. Thank you again for listening, and please join us next time.